evening, everyone, and welcome to another amazingly fantastic night of Fandom Access. I am your ever faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations. So, what have we got going on tonight? We've got Big Sky and his Dark Materials. Jamie will not be joining us this evening, as she has holiday stuff she is up to. So, it's just going to be me and Karen tonight. So, as soon as Karen gets here, we will get started right up. So, good news, next week we will be adding a new show to the lineup, the return for season 5 of The Expanse, which I cannot wait for. So, we got that going on. And I don't know if we got anything else coming up soon, but we have that, so there's that to look forward to. What else have I been watching that I can talk about while I wait for Karen? Nothing. Actually, that's not entirely true. Never mind. Here's Karen. Yay.
Hi, EJ.
Good evening, Karen. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good.
Great.
So without Jamie, we've just got the two shows and
yep.
That'll be it for tonight. But next,
two shows tonight, yeah.
Next week we get to add a fun show next week. The Expanse starts tomorrow.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I'm pretty excited about that.
I am too.
I'm sure all Expanse fans are psyched to have it back. Looking forward to it. And it's coming back to some time because Big Sky's going to take a break after
next
week's episode.
Okay.
I'm not sure for how long. Next week's is the mid-season finale. But I don't know what that means. Like, is it really going to be a long break, or is it just because it's like Christmas and New Year's coming? I don't know.
Probably because it's Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah. I might just be off for like a couple of days. Yeah. So, I want to jump into that first, or?
Yes, let's jump
okay.
Right into Big Sky.
You watched it today? I watched it like a week ago.
Yes.
And I had to kind of read a recap just to like remind myself of what happened. When I watched it a week ago, I like immediately started texting Jamie about just like, this show is ridiculous and bad, right? Like, I think I've been clear about that. And yet I kind of am now into watching it.
Yeah.
And this episode was so frustrating in so many ways. Like, so many, yeah, there's so many characters that do things that I don't understand, particularly all of the women, right? Like, what's his name, who writes the show, David Kelly, is supposed to be known for, like, writing good female characters. And they're, like, whoever is writing this is a man that does, like, they're just such tropes and such horrible female characters on the show, except for the greatest one, Grace.
Yes. Yeah.
So anyway, I had a lot of frustration with this episode, and yet it's so out there that you're just like, wow, I can't wait to see what happens. So what did you think about it?
Well, speaking of tropes, I mean, you know, maybe it's because I've seen it so many times for so many years. I hate the absolute, with a passion at this point, the trope of, oh, look, we found them, but no, we didn't, because we didn't look far enough, because I'm not going to go with my gut instinct, because I think I heard something, but I'm not quite sure, but my partner in crime over here thinks we should move on, so I'm not going to pay attention, and, you know, even though the girls are right under me, we're just going to move on to somewhere else. It's every movie, it's every show. It's not even a trope anymore. It's, I don't know what it is. It's annoying is what it is.
Yeah, it was very frustrating to me that So Cassie and Jenny come in and they're just walking around on the floor and the girls can hear that down below. But when the girls are screaming and banging on the metal trailer and making all that noise, Cassie and Jenny can't hear them up above.
Yeah. And but as it pans down, after they leave the room and it pans down, you see the crack in the board. And there's actually a straight line where there's a, you know, where the metal container has cracks in the top. So it's like, it's not even like the, you know what I mean? Like there's that small enough area, you know, while it's not huge, it's enough that they could hear them. And Cass even says, I think I hear something.
Yeah, she does. She's like,
yeah,
oh, I think I hear something.
That really bothered me.
Yeah, and they could have easily, like, looked through the cracks in the floor and seen that, just as we saw it, right? Like, it was written that way totally just to be a cliffhanger for the end of the episode.
Well, yeah,
like,
I mean,
no other reason than to give a cliffhanger, yeah.
It's your typical trope, and it's just aggravating, especially when, you know, earlier in the episode, they're like, okay, we bugged the sheriff's car, keep an eye on him, we're going to go follow up this lead that makes no sense. Why don't you already suspect the sheriff. Follow the sheriff. Follow him. And you would have already been there. You would have seen which building he went into. You wait for him to leave, and then you go in and snoop around. Because now you know which building, instead of going, okay, we've got 20 buildings on this property, we got to search.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like these women, they're smart and stupid at the same time. You know? Like, they both really have some really good ideas and some moments of brilliance. And then they're going through all these files with these truck drivers, and they're like, oh, this guy's got a rap sheet this long. And, I think it's, you know, it's like, come on. You ladies are smart enough to know that as long as this has been going on, it's not going to be somebody with a rap sheet. Because otherwise, this would have gotten found out a long time ago.
Well, I mean, and a couple of things I found extremely frustrating about that was the way that they just basically the first guy they come across who you know has a rap sheet and what he has a rap sheet of is soliciting prostitution. He doesn't have a rap sheet of kidnapping and like torturing and killing and trafficking women. Like he like solicitation, okay, he's picked up prostitutes, but like how many of those guys maybe have? Like, it's just the first person they come across, like, oh, it's gotta be him, right? Like and to her credit, Jenny is like, well, maybe not. And Cassie's like, no, I totally want to go undercover. That's another annoying part. Like, let's go undercover with a prostitute. Like, could I just once see a woman go undercover as, like, a lawyer? Like, on every cop show, the woman always goes undercover as a prostitute.
Well,
granted.
To be fair, they kind of didn't have a choice in that regard.
Well, yeah. Yes. And to be fair, prostitutes are going missing. So, you know, it is relevant to the case, but, you know, that was these two women who actually are really smart a lot of the time and supposedly, like, good cops and good detectives, you know, and one's, you know, I mean, Cassie makes it clear several times that she's been undercover as a prostitute before. Like, they just exhibit such poor police work in that scene, which I felt like was really, like, just an excuse to get that actress dressed up in a short dress and put her on television dressed like that. I really like... Now, to be fair, it did proceed into kind of a hilarious scene where this trucker is like, he's like, are you clean? I got a family.
That was funny.
And then he's like... proceeds to make her, like, use all that sanitizer and...
Yeah. That shit was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's where the show, like, has moments that you're like, okay, this is, like, kind of fun to watch. You know, and then, you know, the whole thing goes bad. Even whether or not he's guilty, which we know he's not, they blew it. And they're not going to be able to, like, ever go back and do that again. Like, don't you think pretty much, like, all the truckers now are going to be like, hey, like, there's some, you know, men going undercover. Like, they've blown their chance to catch anyone else.
Exactly. As soon as they showed up, with the, you know, when Cassie had to come out and pull her gun, the dig was up, you know? I mean, it was kind of obvious that, oops, we're done.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were going in the wrong direction anyway. I mean, they were not, nearly as annoying and yet not as awesome as some other parts of the show were this week. I mean, everything that went on with Ligarski and Ronald was, I don't know, in some ways it was kind of interesting and not expected, and in some ways it was just stupid. And I don't love the parts of the story that rely on the name of Ligarski's wife. Helen is Ronald's mother. Ligarski's wife is, I forget her name. But
don't
that
remember.
Like, I find it kind of, another thing I texted Jamie was, Jamie, I don't understand how these two bozos have been able to run a human trafficking enterprise all this time, because they're barely holding on to the edge of sanity. And are we to believe, like, it's hard to believe that Rick has never killed anyone before, and that Ron, like they're so barely on the edge that I just don't know how they've held it together this long. It seems like, is this the first problem they've ever encountered, and they're just completely unable to deal with it in any way, shape, or form? Like, I don't really know what's going on with these guys, but I really can't believe that they. I mean, there are parts of it that are really fun to watch. I rather enjoyed, in particular, when Ligarski pretty much loses it in the other cop's office. Like, he first, I mean, he doesn't, I mean, he's losing it, but he's also purposely deflecting, right? Because that's
right.
What a
that
sociopath would do.
Off.
Yeah. Why did it piss you off?
You know, because I'm like, really? I'm like, it was a brilliant ploy, you know? Oh, you know, this
mm-hmm.
whole, you know, all these movements and everything, and God forbid, you know, you say Blue Lives Matter because now you're a bigot, you know, and it was like he twisted this whole situation to make himself
yeah.
look innocent. I mean, it was brilliant,
yeah.
which is why I hated it.
yeah.
That's
okay,
why
well,
I
that
was like,
sense. Yeah.
bitch.
yeah. I mean, it was pretty great. I enjoyed that also, seeing him really, you know, but, and I enjoyed that the way that, I forget the name of the cop who has brought him in, but the cop who has brought him in says, you're deflecting, that's not what I asked you. And he's sort of onto him, and then, you know, Ligarski goes off. And so what I missed was, I think I would have liked to have seen a follow-up where he says to Cassie and Jenny, yeah, that guy's nuts, and he totally was lying. Like, we don't see any indication that, like, he hasn't bought it, you know? I guess I would have liked to see that, if only because it would show finally a man validating what Jenny and Cassie have been saying all along, right?
But that's the problem. They've pissed him off to the point where he's not going to give him that bone. he's not going
to. And yet he has to know it. Like, he catches on right away that Ligarski is deflecting. But then, you know, Ligarski continues to just go off anyway. It was great. It was a little frustrating. I mean, it did give the girls a chance to track him. I like, you know, Ligarski seems to be, like, is it believable to me that he's falling apart at the first problem? Or maybe I do believe it. I don't know. He's really...
Wait, you
edge.
Know, it's funny because,
Ronald...
like, it's actually funny you say that because Artie actually said to me, he's like, how have these guys not gotten caught before? And, you
exactly.
know, seeing what we're seeing,
yeah.
you can make that assumption, but at the same time, you think about, okay, this is also the first time that they screwed up like this to where they actually took somebody that people noticed missing and people care about and people are going to look for, you know, up to this point, it's all been prostitutes, you know, and, you know, usually prostitutes don't have families that are looking for them, you know, they might have other prostitute friends that are looking for them, but nobody's going to take the other prostitutes seriously. Anyway, so,
well,
I, you know
but,
what I mean?
But,
this,
yeah.
This is the first time somebody's gone in their direction saying, hey, what's going on here, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, surely it's not the first time they must have encountered a woman who fought back or tried to escape or I mean, truly nothing has ever gone. I mean, I know they probably have not had a trio. They've had maybe isolated women who felt more helpless maybe. I don't know. It just seems like, I mean, it maybe isn't also a little bit like trope or just insulting the idea that, that none of the women they've ever kidnapped have fought back or caused them any, you know, caused them any trouble at all. But maybe it's possible, yeah.
I'm sure the women have fought back. The problem is you have outside people looking for them. Because, you know,
yeah.
I mean, think about it. There's a big difference between women fighting back and other people looking. That's where their big problem is. That and Grace. Because Grace is clearly the smartest
Grace,
person they've ever kidnapped.
Yes.
Because if Grace isn't there, Danielle's helpless.
Yes, she would be. You're right. So Grace causes more trouble. So another thing that Jamie texted me, and I texted her back. So in the beginning of the show, the news mentions the girls have been missing 4 days, and Grace's mother is on television saying, like, you know, please come home, whatever. And then cut to later in the episode, and Jamie and I were both like, so how are maggots already growing on the spam that we haven't even seen them fed. Like, so has the spam been in there 2 days? Like, they're enormous maggots, right? They're like full on mealworms crawling in that thing. So I don't know how they got maggoty spam so quickly. I don't think that Ronald is feeding them bad food. I think Ronald is probably feeding them perfectly fine meal. I mean, they might not be tasty, but he's not trying to, like.
Well, and on top of that, in the last episode, Ligursky says, we need to let things cool down. Give them enough food for 2 weeks, and we're going to steer clear. And then the very next day, they're going back.
Yeah.
So it's like, change our mind.
And she's got this raging infection, which, like, I do believe that would become infected for sure. But, I mean,
oh yeah,
did she
escape absolutely
on day two, day three? Like in my mind, she only got shot by an arrow like less than 24 hours ago.
Right.
But anyway, it's fully infected. This is believable. It's also a little thin to me where this antibiotic comes from. And so Rick says, oh, my brother-in-law is a veterinarian, right? But it's really not clear to me how, like, his brother-in-law is just like, here, let me give you, like, let me risk my license and my career, whatever, to give you this giant syringe that you can just carry it around. I thought maybe he broke it and stole it out of the
medical office.
He could have
stole it.
Like,
I would have to say he stole it. I don't.
It's not going to help. If you're at the point where you need maggots to, and this is a real medical thing, right? Like maggots to consume dead flesh.
That was a brilliant idea.
Yeah. They won't stop the infection. They'll just, like, eat the stinking flesh. But she needs,
it
like.
It was something to buy time. And she even says it's not a fix. She even says it's just to buy time.
Yeah. So it's not clear to me also how these idiots expect to, like, okay, so they've decided now they're going to cut their losses. They can't sell these girls into the larger ring, but they found someone who's just going to take them for free. They basically are giving the girls away for free now, right?
Yeah.
Someone's coming from Ontario to pick them up. But do you think he's going to take Grace? Like, why would you take Grace? Now you have to deal with her raging infection, and, like, she needs a hospital, right? If I'm the criminal syndicate, she needs to be killed, right? Like, just kill her and move on with your life and move the other two. Like, I'm not really sure why Rick thinks someone's going to show up and not notice that she's feverish, borderline delirious, with, like, gaping, stinking, maggot-infected wounds. Yeah. I mean, I think maybe part of Grace's plan is, like, whoever they're being sold to will see the maggots and be like, holy shit, we're not taking her. Right? We're not seeing any of this. Get away from, like, I don't know. But that seems to be a poorly thought out part of this plan also.
I love when Rick goes there and he's like, you know, the irony of this is I started doing this for girls like you. For wholesome girls. And I'm like, this dude he needs help.
Yes.
But then they're like, you know, and he's like, okay, you might be a little prick. And she's like, I'm looking at one right now.
Yeah. She's pretty awesome. I mean, she definitely just knows instinctively to push him and push him and push him to make, like, throw him off balance and
Yeah.
make him, like, the more stressed he is, the more he's screwing up, right? I actually, so are you getting the feeling like, so for the first, like, three episodes, it felt like Rick was in charge and Rick was the mastermind and Ronald is his, like, Ronald does the dirty work, but Rick is the boss, right?
Right.
And it seems increasingly that the smarter and more stable of the two might be Ronald. He might be crazier and weirder, but he seems to, you know, he says to Rick, like, oh, you think I don't have an insurance policy? Like, you think I'm going to be in trouble? I've got it set up so it all leads back to you. That was interesting, and I believe that. I'm not really sure. Okay, another ridiculous part was this taxi dance. I'm like, what is this, the 1940s? Like, you're a taxi dancer? Like, what? Like, that hasn't, like, hasn't that gone out since, like, the 70s or whatever?
I don't know.
I mean, that's a very old-timey term, right? But anyway, he goes to the, he's like a paid partner at these dances. I mean, what, one thing that really kind of bothered me is that Rick's wife, who seems cool sometimes, and yet here is a woman being portrayed as so bored and to get away from her husband that she's going to have an affair with the first weirdo who looks at her, right? Like, come
She's
on,
not
that
having an
is
affair.
so weird.
She just
Not
went out
yet,
dancing with
not
a guy.
yet. Yeah, not yet, but she's definitely, I mean, it
Well,
just, he, look, AJ, don't you think that he was so creepy and weird?
yes.
Like,
Well,
why?
yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you throw him out of your store and call the cops? Like, he was
Well,
so
here's my
creepy and
question.
weird.
What is
Yeah.
Ronald's plan? Like, what is his end goal? What's he up to? I mean, what is the point of him? You know, he knows this Ligursky's wife. You know,
Yeah, I wasn't, at first I
so.
was like, is he just gonna try to get her to cheat on him to like just to get revenge or be a jerk? Like, that's not a plan. And then by the end of it, I was like, is his plan to make Rick angry so he kills his wife? Because that's not a good plan. Because you don't really know if it'll happen, right? I don't know. What do you think his plan is? Who knows,
I
right?
don't know. That's why I'm asking you. Because I have no idea.
I have no idea. I have no idea what this plan is and how it's an insurance policy. Or is it an insurance policy at all? And is it just like it makes no sense to me. The whole thing was also, did
Like,
it catch the part
I would think,
where, go ahead.
I was say, I would think the last thing you want to do is irritate Ligursky further. Like, you kind of want this
Well,
game guy on
yeah.
his game.
Yeah, right. That whole scene, so weird and poorly, I mean, so this actor does a good job, I guess, of playing a creepy weirdo, but it's just not believable to me that this woman would follow up on this guy who so clearly made her comfortable, uncomfortable, and she falls for this, like, you look lonely. And then she says to him, oh, I'm old enough to be your mother. I was like, what? I was so confused about that I looked that guy up on IMDb, and he's like 46, I think. The actor who plays him. Now, he could be playing young, but like, he's, that character is not some young guy that's young. Like, I was like, who wrote this? What the hell is going, what is happening on my television? And then she mentions, oh, you can have the COVID discount when no person on the show ever has worn a mask, but they have a COVID disc.
Yeah.
What? That kind of sloppiness, like, really takes me out of the story.
The
Did you
whole
caught that
COVID,
also,
like
the COVID line?
they oh, the whole well, earlier in the episode, I made a COVID comment. Because it's ridiculous. Don't mention it. If you're not
Yeah.
gonna follow it and make it look, just don't mention it.
Yeah.
You know, just leave it
Make
be.
it either, like, just pretend it never happened. Just be make it a pre-COVID or a post-COVID show and let it just, yeah.
I mean the book was obviously written pre-COVID, so there's no reason you can't tell the story without COVID. You don't have to
Yeah.
have COVID because what's going on? You know, if you
Yeah.
wanna bring awareness or whatever, then then do it right. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen NBC show called Superstore, which is freaking hilarious.
Oh yeah.
But they were mentioned, you know, what's that?
I have never heard you mention it. I didn't know it was a good show.
Oh, it's really funny. I was running out of things to watch, and it's always piqued my curiosity, so I started watching it. It's really funny. But this season, they're doing the whole COVID business, and it's funny to watch because it's so realistic. Because they only wear the masks when nobody's watching, or when only when people are watching. If they're on their own, or like, you know, talking to each the employees are talking to each other in the back room or something, the masks come off. Even though the policy is that the mask should be worn all the time.
And it's like part of the story.
Which is extremely realistic. But it fits. It makes sense. You know, they bring up they're doing it right, you know. Whereas this show mentions the, you know, pandemic and does everything wrong.
Yeah.
And it does. It takes you out of the episode because something stupid like that happens and you're like, what the hell?
Yeah, why did they even mention it, right? Yeah.
So
there's one other thing I wanted to mention, which another part that was like good and frustrating at the same time. So the only person on this show I don't want to include Jenny. Like, Jenny clearly can see that Ligarski is a creep and a weirdo and is into this, right? But like nobody in Ronald or Rick's world seems to recognize how awful they are, except Ronald's mother. Like, that was so interesting this week. I thought it kind of makes sense because like Ronald's watching the news report about these girls and his mother says, "Oh, young pretty girls, you know, that lines up right with your urges." And I'm like, well, I mean, being attracted to young, pretty girls is not, like, weird. It made me think, like, that's your urges. Like, does he have a past where he's been, like, does he watch underage porn? Is he a sex offender? Has he been, like,
right?
Like, is there something there? Oh. Because she's suspicious of him for really no reason. She catches him watching it, and she's like, do you know something about that? Do you have anything to do with that? And I'm like, well, why? Like, if I came in, AG, and you were watching the news about somebody being kidnapped, I wouldn't be like, oh, you're watching the news. Do you have something to do with that? Right? Like,
the problem is, does she have
a reason?
Yeah, because mom's just as nutty as he is.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, think about their creepy fucking relationship.
Yeah, it is creepy. It is creepy, and we would be remiss to not mention the scene where Ronald says, I don't like to be watched while I'm eating my cereal. Like, what? What? And then he pours the cereal over her head, which I think that scene could have gone the wrong way, but was made awesome by Valerie Mahaffey, the actress who plays the mother, like, just plays it off, like, she doesn't react. She just continues talking and wipes off her head. I feel like he must have a past that we haven't been told yet.
See,
for his mother
immediately
suspect
I didn't even think that deeply into it. I just figured, well, as nutty as his mom is, I'm not surprised. You know,
their relationship is
so off that it doesn't surprise me in the least.
Then she goes on to say, "I still believe there's more good in you than there is bad. But the day I stop believing that is going to be a very bad day for you and for me," right? Like, she's, I don't know. I just felt like when Cassie and Jenny, like, learn of his existence, they're going to, like, he's sort of a nobody. He's unnoticed all the time, right? But I don't know. I just feel like, you know, has he done things in his life that she knows about for her to, I just thought for her to immediately suspect him like that was maybe not without reason. Otherwise, what's the purpose of her, like, what is the purpose of her, of this storyline? Just to be, like, I mean, are they being written as weird just for the sake of being weird? like just so he can be a weird guy. And you know, I was thinking this week, like, are these two weirdo characters sort of doing a disservice to the true story of like human trafficking in this country? Because I think that a lot of the people, I mean, I don't know any human traffickers, but you know, this show is about a huge crime syndicate, and I think there are probably plenty of perfectly sane, normal seeming people who are into this just because of their own cruelty and, you know, evilness and whatever, but that they're not these sort of like borderline deranged people that, I mean, this is how people get sucked in. If all human traffickers were like these two, like a lot fewer people would fall into it probably, right? And I just felt like maybe like there's a real story of human trafficking that is not like these two, right?
Well, that's the other thing. I think, you know, I think it's much bigger than what, than just these two idiots.
Yes. I think they're two guys that like, they kidnap girls and move them into this like large ring with all these truckers and is able to move women quickly away from never to be seen again. Right. And apparently like it's all coming out of Canada, that evil country up north. But you know, I mean, you're right. They're small cogs in a big ring. And, you know, they're sort of like the street-level drug dealers, right? And the kingpin at the top is the guy that controls it and makes all the money.
Yeah.
The idea also that these two seem to think they got involved in human trafficking because they were trying to clean up the streets and do something good for the world, like
I believe
think
that.
Most human,
they
most
seem
human
like
traffickers.
Rick seems like a
yeah,
zealot.
But I think, yeah, but I think the story of human trafficking is just people who like want to make money and have disregard for their fellow human. Like, I really doubt that most human traffickers think they're like cleaning up the world. Right?
Oh no,
this is just another
no,
part
I think
of
this is
E2
an isolated. No, this is
yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I was just starting to feel like less enamored of this story of like. I mean, these two are like borderline comic now, the way like things are getting away from them and they're, you know, unable to, they're unraveling so quickly. Bodes well that our girls might get away. Although, I wonder what's going to happen in that mid-season finale.
Well,
I mean, the only other
really
thing that happened
they...
that, we... go ahead.
I would say I hope they rescue them the next episode. I really thought they were going to rescue them this episode.
I did too.
Because enough's enough. Let's move on to whatever the meatier part of the story is. Because this whole kidnapping part is just getting very.
Well, how far can it go?
Drawn out.
Like, how many episodes can how many episodes can we watch of these girls locked up down below, being like, "We got to get away," and they keep getting paid, right?
Especially
like,
since.
Yeah, I would.
Especially since Grace is on the verge of going septic.
It would be good to see them get rescued, and then maybe the story's broken open, and it becomes a bigger search to take down the overall trafficking ring.
Right.
You know, it becomes more of a straight-up crime story, maybe. Or something like that. Like, if these two girls get sold to the Canadians next week and sort of disappear, like, then we have to watch more episodes of them with their next captor. Like, yeah, that can only go so far with these girls. So let them get rescued and see where that goes. And we also have, so at the tail end of the episode, we saw Legarski walking up the stairs with a hammer in his hand. So I think that's
yeah, his wife's dead.
You think he's
going to
kill
his
wife?
I think she's a dead woman. I could totally see. I mean, you see the look on his face. He's like dancing. Like, Legarski's not the type of guy to loan his wife out, you know?
I'm like, what is it? Footloose, you're not allowed to dance. Like, it just seemed to me like this has not seemed like a relationship of a woman who's not allowed to, I mean, she's not like some woman that is like in an obviously abusive, controlling relationship where she's not, I mean, she owns a store, she goes to work, she seems very like chill and cool with him, right? And his ex-wife still likes him enough to warn him. And then suddenly he's going to bludgeon her to death because she, like, I mean, she has been very clear with him that she's unhappy. right?
Right, but
I mean,
this is the first time she's acted on it, and he's not the type of guy to. I think I mean, maybe part of it's because he's becoming unhinged with everything else going on.
Yeah.
Barely holding it together to begin with.
Yeah, and like maybe now having killed two people, he's just like snapped and he's unable to stop killing people. Like now he's on a roll with killing people. I don't know. I wondered if it's a red herring.
He likes it.
He's just gonna scare her, or he's on to something else. I don't know. Why wouldn't he shoot her?
Maybe there's a loose, because people hear those. Maybe there's a loose floorboard that he's going to fix. And we're just supposed to think he's going to kill her.
Yeah. I mean, so yeah, he shouldn't shoot people with a service weapon, but he shot Cody in the face, right? He killed the other guy with a bow and arrow. Like, he has many ways to kill people. And it seems to me like bludgeoning her with a hammer is the least good way to do it, but...
Well, it's personal.
Yeah. I think it might be a red herring. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I think to kill her also, to me, doesn't, like, provide much to the story. Like, I know that he's crazy and a horrible person, and he doesn't need to kill her for me to understand that. Unless, like, it's somehow part of Ronald's plan to make Rick...
Yeah, I don't know.
Kill his wife out of jealousy. I mean, the flaw in that plan is that how would Ronald know that... Helen would go home and tell that not Helen that that Rick's wife would go home and tell him, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Listen,
yeah.
I've had because Rick's gonna tell him. Listen, I've had a bad day. I had to kill my wife last night.
Yeah, I don't know. So anyway, I guess we'll see what happens next week. They better. The promo for next week I thought was red. Did you see the promo for next week?
No.
Do you want me to tell you what the promo for next week is?
Oh, I don't care.
So in the promo, we see Cassie and Jenny open the doors to the trailer. They do get down there and they open the doors to the trailer. But what we see, the point of view is from the rear of the trailer looking at the door. It's what would be the girl's point of view, right? But it's from the way back at the trailer. And so the trailer appears to be empty. So... they've set it up to look maybe like they're too late, but because it's the girl's POV, they could just be way in the back of the trailer, right?
Yeah, we know how the previews are.
Yeah. We know all promo departments, all network marketing departments are liars, so we've been burned enough times not to believe anything we see. So, anyhow, it's so frustrating and so dumb in so many ways, and yet I'm definitely, like, now I'm into watching it. And I hate myself for it. So, anyway, I guess we can wrap that up, huh?
Yep.
Okay. So, how did you
on
like your Dark Materials this week?
Dark Materials. That was fun. Lyra kind of worried me a little in the episode. But
yeah,
another solid episode. Yeah, when Lyra sent Pan to attack the poor monkey, Lyra seemed to be enjoying herself a little bit, or maybe that's just the way I read it.
Well, and I think that's partly why we had that scene later where she says to Will that she didn't like the way it made her feel, like. Not, like, it could mean she didn't like that she sort of enjoyed it, right? And, like, what does that really mean? I mean, I guess she felt powerful, and she felt like she was getting some revenge and things, yeah. Is maybe the best episode of the season. I thought this episode was so, so, so good. I mean, of course, I'm Mrs. Coulter. This episode really was Mrs. Coulter's episode, right? And Ruth Wilson was killing it. And the writers were killing it, the direction. It looked beautiful. It was beautifully lit. The animals were fantastic. Like, I just thought everything about this was great. It, you know, Lee Scoresby and, what's his name, Jopari were not in it. And the witches were not in it. And there was very little of the Magisterium. Like, all those storylines that feel like they're not really going anywhere and I'm not sure about, like, did not drag us away from some really, really good... I mean, every character, I think, saw really good development this week. Not every character. Lyra and Will and Mrs. Coulter saw really good development this week. And even the Cardinal got a little bit of a spine. Coming through to a world... I mean, it's funny to think of, like, of our world as, like, some sort of pinnacle of female empowerment, because it's really not. Like, we, like Mrs. Coulter, through Mrs. Coulter's eyes, like, to meet a female academic is, like, incredible, right? I mean, we know that women struggle in academia to get the same credit men do, just like in every other field, right? But it's so different from Mrs. Coulter. I mean, all those scenes were, like, so amazing. Like, just... Mrs. Coulter looking around and seeing stuff and seeing women, like, in the world, like, not even saying anything. Ruth Wilson was just, like, she was just incredible. And I'm not the hugest fan of that actress, but she was unbelievable in this episode, I thought.
Well, and that's the thing, too, like, you know, you almost feel bad for her in this episode, because her entire life, especially with a scene with Boreal, when she called him out, she's like, what did you, you know, she's like, what did you want to add me to your collection? You know, and, it, you know, and for her to see how, you know, things are in this world, and you almost feel bad for her, because her entire life, men have, you know, either wanted to possess her or her ideas, you know, when she was talking about how all these different things that she's written, but men had to take credit for it because she wasn't allowed to, even though they were her ideas and her genius, you know? And now here Boreal is treating her, and Boreal's seen how things are, and he's still treating her the same way as, you know, the men, other men in her world. Which kind of surprised me a little bit. I mean, we kind of saw a little bit of it last week. I thought he was just smitten with her, but he really... doesn't get how to woo her properly.
and doesn't care. Like, you know, I think this, well, one thing that was really interesting was that he's been so mysterious, and he seemed to be a character who maybe had a plan and knew what was going on, and if he partnered up with her, they could be an incredible team. And it turns out he's just another, you know, loser man who, like, you know, she points out, like with all the ideas in this world, like, all you've done is gone around and steal a bunch of precious artwork. And, like, he's like, no, I also formed a company and made a name for myself. And I, like, wanted to punch him in the face. He was like every stupid tech bro that you meet in a bar and want to punch in the face, you know, who, like, just wants to talk. I mean, when he was like, listen to my speakers, I was like, oh my God, this is every, like, asshat I ever, like, went on a date with in my 20s. Right? He's like, listen to these speakers, and like, she can barely restrain herself from punching him in the face at that moment. You can totally tell, right? Like, she's like, are you kidding me? Like, this, like, these people, like, they have no demons, right? They have no demons, and, like, women can do whatever they want, and, like, all the stuff. And he's like, my speakers, look at all the stuff I got. I made a company. Like, he has a really – it surprised me that Boreal has no vision, really, right? Like,
I think he only
wants the knife to go collect more artworks from other, like, worlds, maybe. Like, what does he want the knife for, do you think?
You know, I haven't thought that far ahead with it.
I mean, maybe I think that because last week's voiceover talked about the origins of the subtle knife and how the people who created it used it just to enrich themselves, and then, like, the specters came and ate them or whatever is how that story goes, right?
I mean, that's probably exactly what he wants it for.
Yeah, he just, like, I guess all along I was thinking, like, he was a big thinker with a plan, and it turns out that he's just... You know, and that he doesn't really want Lyra for her talent or her gifts. He just needed a kid who could steal the knife for him. Like, all he wanted was the knife. Like, he doesn't want Lyra for any other reason. Like, he got the knife. That's all he really cares about, right? He doesn't even really want the alethiometer, which to me is I mean, you've got to have those two tools together, right?
Well, yeah.
Like, why would you give up the
Well, he had no intention of giving the Lithiometer back. I mean, it was all for
right.
He wasn't.
You're right. He was just, I mean, he was really taken down a notch in terms of being, like, a character with, like, vision. And I guess he's really just like all the other guys in the Magisterium. A little bit smarter because he's been living this double life all this time, but really just interested in, like, enriching himself and his own power. And, like, if he wants Mrs. Coulter, it's just because she's beautiful. It's not probably to give her a chance to really, you know, become, like, a Dr. Malone
right.
type situation, right? That scene was awesome also, wasn't it? When Mrs. Coulter goes to Mary Malone?
Yeah. Well, that was, that was great because totally threw Coulter off her game.
Yeah. Yeah. She like
to the point where she just ups and leaves.
it's rare that she doesn't know how to like respond and manipulate a person, right? And she's just never met like a person like this. Like first of all, when she says, "Oh, Mrs. Malone," and Mary's like, "Oh, that's Dr. Malone." Like Mrs. Coulter's so blown away by that, right? And then when I think the thing about like, do you have any published papers? Like, I think it wasn't that she was mad that like the idea that Mary assumed that Marissa had published papers was so huge for her, right? Like, and I guess like Marissa seeing what she could have been in a world that didn't like where men didn't control her and men really, I mean, you talked about kind of feeling sorry for her. Remember when she tells that when she's yelling at Boreal and she's like, oh, like, you know, so after I had this child out of wedlock and then Azrael like thought he like fixed it for everyone. But like she had to endure the whole rest of her life of like people like, you know, like whispering about her and thinking things about like she's a horrible person. But these men in this society turned her into that horrible person. And the only way she could survive was by being a horrible person, right? Yeah. That was pretty amazing. And those two, I mean, those two will meet again, right? Surely in the next world.
Most likely, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, all of that, I mean, that was all really great. The kids were great. The kids are always great, right? But the kids were really great. And you know, I love that scene with the kids at the end where they talk about like Will's like, oh my god, that was your mother. And he realized, you know, they talk about how like, I mean, Lyra's just been really abused by every adult in her life except for maybe like except for the Egyptians and Lee Scoresby, right? And they kind of talk about like, you know, Lyra's like, I don't want to be like her, you know, and Will's like, just be yourself. Like they're so good together, these two kids. I just love this episode. I need to stop going on and on about it. I just thought it was really great. And I thought the monkey was great. The monkey's one of the best actors on the show.
Poor monkey. Let's talk a little about the poor monkey.
Yeah. I love the monkey.
So, I want more history with the whole thing with Coulter and the monkey. Because apparently Coulter is not separated from her monkey. She felt all that.
Yeah.
So
earlier
in the episode, I felt like I felt like it might be a throwaway line, but I thought, you know what, there's a point to this. When she says when she would go out and he's like, where's your demon? And she's like, haven't you ever met a woman that has self-control before? So that was her and her demon. It's all mind over matter. My monkey is so strong all the time because while it doesn't affect her, it's affecting her rookie when they're separated like that. She apparently has trained herself with the self-control to not be bothered.
And while she calls it self-control, I mean, I think it must be, like, incredibly painful. Like self-control and learning to tolerate and live with constant pain, right? Because we've seen Liar and Panda be separated for even, like, you know, they could never be separated at all. Like, it's painful to them. And all those children who were separated are, like, turned into basically zombies, right? And when Pan is attacking the monkey and Mrs. Coulter's clearly in pain, but you can see after a while that she's like ignoring it. She's like, you know, having that self-control, and like Lyra's really surprised to see her start to stand up and start to, like, you know, Mrs. Coulter's like setting that aside while the monkey is still, that poor monkey. Okay. Uh-huh. I want to see more scenes of the monkey wearing a seatbelt, because that was awesome. The poor little monkey in the backseat of the Tesla wearing a seatbelt. That poor monkey. When she left and the monkey was looking out the window, you know, and then she comes back and she doesn't even greet the monkey. Like, she's still kind of a jerk. Like, why is she a jerk to the monkey all the time? Like, I guess maybe she doesn't want to be nice to it and be close to it. Maybe that just makes it harder to be away from it.
Maybe.
I don't know. You know, this brings up another question, which I think we talked about last week. If you kill a demon, you kill the human, right? How come every single person in the Magisterium has a tiny, fragile demon? Like, see the priest gets arrested has a spider?
No, if you kill the human, you kill the demon. If you kill the demon, the human still lives.
Are you sure?
Yes, because we've seen it happen.
Who? Who was seeing whose demon was killed and they lived?
There was somebody with the gypsy. There was somebody during the gypsy fight where the demon was killed and the human was still alive.
Really?
Yeah.
Because did they turn into basically a zombie like the kids? Like, those kids' demons were alive and they're not able to function.
Well, that was that was different because they were separated. I don't know, like, I think they didn't really delve into it, but you can't, you don't die if your demon is killed.
Well, I don't know what
happened. I can't imagine your life is very good. Yeah,
I
don't either.
I need to Google that, because all these people that have demons that are very fragile little animals, like, you know, I'm going to Google it while we talk, but, at any rate, she's really the only person who is able to do that. It surprises me also that Boreal doesn't know that. Like, she does take that monkey around with her everywhere. And I guess nobody notices that they can be separated. And that it doesn't speak. But it seems like we've never seen Boreal's snake talk to him, right? And we don't see the Magisterium's bugs talk to them. So while they can all talk, they don't necessarily all talk to their people. I am looking up a
I get the feeling the monkey probably used to talk, but is probably afraid to now. I feel like Coulter told it once, just keep your trap shut.
Just never speak again, Yeah. I think if a demon dies, you die. I'm looking at Wikipedia now. I'm looking separation. I'm looking at Wikipedia, but blah 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 blah. I'm looking on Wikipedia just to see, but we should know this by now, right? But the show has really not been clear about it. I think if you read the books, you know, you might know this by now. But we separation between human and demon kills both and releases a huge burst of energy. But that's how. By killing Roger as he'll open the door, but
yeah,
I don't know. At any rate, when a person dies, their demon fades away like atoms of smoke. Likewise, when a demon is killed, its human dies as well.
Oh, okay.
At least in the books. Yeah. So anyway, Although I wonder if that would happen to could Mrs. Coulter survive that? I don't know. That was a great fight. It was a great fight. It was good to see, we saw earlier. It was really painful to me earlier in the season to watch the monkey, last season, I guess, when the monkey attacked Pan, when Mrs. Coulter sicked the monkey. Lyra talks about that in this episode. And then to see Pan turn into a wolverine and go after the monkey, I felt really sorry for the monkey.
Oh, I did
I
too.
always feel sorry for the monkey. But it was good to see Pan. I mean, Pan was a panda most of the time. I wonder if Pan is going to turn into the red, if the red panda is going to be his permanent form, because he's done the red
I
panda a
feel
lot
like,
lately.
see, I get the feeling that when the time comes, I think Pan is still going to be able to be whatever it wants to be. I don't think Pan is
And won't
going to
settle.
be, I don't think Pan's going to
Won't
settle at
settle.
puberty.
By the way, I went to a small zoo last Friday. I went to the Brandywine Zoo, which is outside of Wilmington, Delaware. It's quite small. They have two red pandas, and when I got there at like 11 in the morning, the red pandas were like waking up and coming out in the sun, and their keeper was in the place with them giving them food, and I saw them eating bamboo and doing stuff. And I said to the keeper, "Oh, do you get a lot more visitors now that they're on HBO?" And she was like, "What? There's red pandas on HBO?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, there's like, So then I told her all about the show. They were so cute. I tried to get a good picture, but I couldn't get a picture nearly as good as what we just see on HBO. I mean, that's an interesting theory, AJ, that maybe, because Lyra has said last season, like, she hopes Pan never settles.
Yeah. Well, it just
And
seems
that
the
he would just
direction they're
be.
going, because if Lyra's this prophecy, then Pan has got to be part of it too. So if Lyra's going to be different, I would like think Pan is also.
Yep. Okay. Fair enough. That makes sense. So, two episodes left. We
Yep.
might know soon enough, or we might not. But yeah, I thought it was great. I hope, I mean, if we get two more episodes like this, that'll be fantastic. I didn't really have, I
Yeah.
mean, I have like almost nothing to criticize, I think, in this week's episode.
Yeah. One other thing, is Will really doesn't like hurting people, which is a good quality. But when push comes to shove and you're defending yourself, he does seem to be like, hey.
Yeah, you know,
So,
we
but I
talked
think
about
it
this.
I think it's going to be interesting moving forward, though, with him, with that.
We talked about it a little last week when he got in a fight with the boy who had taken the knife from Giacomo, and remember we talked about like, okay, he took boxing in school. Why is he not fighting? Why is he not fighting? And it wasn't, he really didn't want to fight until the last. And he really, like, it almost didn't go their way. Like, it was, I was kind of waiting for Lyra to break off from Coulter and go and help Will. But in the end, like, Will broke free and had to save Lyra from being too, like, entranced with Mrs. Coulter, right?
Yeah, that scene I found very interesting. Like I said, like I asked you, when it started, she seemed to really be enjoying herself. I mean, granted, she does say that, she didn't like the way it made her feel, but I definitely get the sense that there was enjoyment.
She has a lot to be angry about. I mean, Mrs. Coulter is
Oh, yeah.
responsible for the death of Billy Costa, and for many, many other children there, and for Lyra came very close to death. And like, okay, Mrs. Coulter saved her, but Lyra wouldn't have been at risk in the first place if Mrs. Coulter wasn't killing children. And I think that, even though it was Asriel who killed Roger, there's a degree of responsibility that Mrs. Coulter bears, and it was very like kind of shocking to me when Mrs. Coulter's like, "Oh, Lyra, come with me. I'll show you how to use the lithiometer, and I'll explain to you why your father killed Roger." And I was like, I'm like, oh my God, like there's not an like, first of all, Lyra knows what it is. Lyra knows he did it so he could open the rip,
right.
open the gate. But also, like, the way Mrs. Coulter said it, I just felt like there's no like, you can't make an excuse for that. There's no explanation for that. There's no reason for that, right? He like killed a child. And if Roger hadn't showed up, would he have just killed Lyra? If she hadn't brought Roger,
well,
with her,
he
right?
Does. He does say, "No, I didn't want you know the whole." We talked about this last
yeah.
week that he would. So it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
What he might have done had Roger not been there.
Yeah. Yeah, and he basically like yeah. I mean, I think so. While she didn't actually do it, I do think like in Lyra's view, there's a degree of responsibility that Mrs. Coulter has also, right?
Let's not forget, I mean, talk about a difficult situation. I mean, she's only known for a very short time that Coulter's even her mother. It's not like she grew up with her, you know? It was like, here's this woman who's been nice to me. Oh, she's my mother? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
nice
something else I was going
to
say, one thing we haven't talked about with Mary. One thing I got to say is I was not expecting Mary to be as prominent as she is. I thought it was going to be, you know, one of those throwaway scenes where, you know, she helps her understand dark matter and dust are the same and kind of like, you know, get to all that and everything. And then that would be the end of her, but Mary keeps popping up. And now it seems that, you know, save the cheerleader, save the world is going to be her job.
Yeah, right? I mean, yeah, I did immediately get that hero's vibe. And
yeah, it's funny.
It's like,
I didn't even think that until you said that. And you know what I thought was funny? Was when the angel was talking to her and it said, protect the girl and the boy, like an afterthought. Like it was like, oh yeah, by the way, you gotta protect the boy too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I still wonder, we've talked about this now and then about the prophecy, which the prophecy is about a child, right? I think the prophecy is not about a girl, it's about a child. And you know, people are pretty sure that it's Lyra and she has things to do, but
we've been told it's Lyra numerous times.
Yeah, I just sometimes wonder if these people could be wrong. Like, is it Will? Or
right.
Or they're wrong somehow.
Well, clearly
the
two of them are intertwined, so I don't think it's so much one or the other. It might be a combination of the two of them.
It's the children or something, yeah. It's like on The 100 where there was that prophecy and then Jordan, Monty's son, in like 2 minutes was like, no, you guys misunderstood the prophecy. That's not what it means. But it was a little bit funny to me that the computer is like, okay, the angel is like, okay, you're basically done living in this world now and I'm going to like shut myself off and like destroy this computer. And you need to like go and save the cheerleader, save the world now. And that Mary does it. I mean, I guess it's really helpful that she was a nun. And although she left the convent and embraced science, she, I guess, never gave up her faith. It's like, it's totally believable to her that an angel is like, okay, you need to go do this.
Well, I think that's the thing. It, you know, the fact that they refer to them, you know, it refers to them as angels. So it kind of makes sense that she buy into it. And I thought it was the scene when, you know, I hadn't even thought of it in this aspect, but the scene when Boreal is telling her about the wraiths, the specters, and he's like, well, it doesn't affect the children. And then immediately Miss Coulter's like, dust. She's like, she immediately realizes that the dust is what's protecting the kids. That's why it doesn't happen until the kids come of age that the specters then attack them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like part of her trying to separate the kids was because, like, kids don't have dust, and she believed kids don't have dust and adults do, and, you know, it's all wrapped up in this. I mean, it's interesting that for Mrs. Coulter, it's much more wrapped up in faith, and for Mary, who was a nun, it's much more wrapped up in science, right? Dark matter is not about sin. But yeah, Mrs. Coulter puts it together in 1 second, and Boreal is like, I don't know why, I just can't go there. I had to trick some kids into going there for me.
Well, I mean, like, not for nothing, Miss Coulter is always the smartest person in the room. There hasn't been a scene. I mean, think about it. Has there been any scene where she was not the smartest person in the room?
Yeah, maybe when she did that scene with Mary this week, but they're equals probably. They're probably intellectual equals, those two. Like Coulter's as smart as Mary. She just hasn't had a chance to be as educated as Mary, probably. But that's
well,
it.
The problem
right.
was
I mean,
Coulter
she's
didn't
so
under-
far
Coulter didn't understand. Coulter was thrown off because while Coulter has written many papers, she's never gotten the credit for the papers, and I think there was a bit of jealousy there, and it threw her off her game.
Yeah, and she doesn't really like, so her area is experimental theology. She doesn't understand it as quantum physics, right? Like, Mary's like,
right.
well, Iris' understanding of quantum physics is extraordinary. And, you know, I mean, Mrs. Coulter, I guess, is a quantum physicist and doesn't know it.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's going to be, Mary's turning out to be more of a character than we thought, but, I mean, it could be great to see her square off against Coulter. I mean, really, that's, you know, Lyra's the star, but they'll be great foils for each other. I bet his Coulter will probably hate Mary, partly because she'll be... Because, like, how could she not be just envious, right? Also because Mary has already been a greater mother figure for Lyra than Coulter ever can be. I mean, imagine, so the computer, like, turned itself off. I wonder if it's broken, because if Mrs. Coulter got in there, like, if Mrs. Coulter ever realized that it's an alethiometer, I started to wonder, do you think Mrs. Coulter can read an alethiometer? Like, she clearly was surprised.
I don't know.
She was surprised that Lyra could read it, but she says to Lyra, like, I know you can read the alethiometer.
Well, no, yeah.
Let me come. She's like, come
we've
home with
seen,
me and I'll
we've
show
seen
you.
Her. I feel like we've seen
read
Coulter
it.
Read it.
Yeah.
Excuse
I mean,
me.
I believe she probably could.
Oh, actually, that was another funny scene when the Magisterium, they're like, go read the alethiometer and find out what Coulter's up to. And he's like, you want me to what?
Yeah.
He's like, are you crazy?
Those guys really can't read it, right? It's like, it could take me weeks to get an answer. Like, because it now seems to me that Lyra doesn't really read the alethiometer as much as the angels send Lyra messages. Yes, she has to be able to read it and interpret it, but, like, so now it's not clear to me, does anybody who picks up an alethiometer get a message from an angel? No, right? Like, it took Lyra a long time to even get it to do anything, and I think maybe you have to be a special person
well,
for the angels to talk to you through it.
It's because you have to kind of give into it. I remember that was how Lyra finally got it figured out. She had to just, like, empty her mind and just kind of give herself over to it.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. But now I'm not so sure, because it seems like the angels could be screwing with everyone. Like, at the end of last week when
you're
like, why'd
you do this?
And the angel says vengeance.
But the vengeance of what?
Yeah. Could be vengeance, like, towards the Magisterium for, like, so misinterpreting and weaponizing faith.
Well, I don't think it's just one thing. I think it might be all Magisteriums and evil entities.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah. Huh. Well, I'm trying to think of what else happened that week. I mean, it was a pretty tight story this week, because it really, I enjoyed
it.
I think we've
covered everything.
Sliced it. Yeah, I think so. All right. So we'll have both these shows again next week, and we'll have The Expanse back.
Yes, I can't wait for The Expanse. So excited.
I know. Is it going to drop once a week, or is it going to drop all at once?
See, I'm not sure. I feel like it dropped all at once last season.
I feel like
but
I
Amazon, you know, I don't know. I feel like Amazon drops stuff all. No, because see, like The Boys was once a week.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure if it drops all at once or not.
Yeah. What is it?
And
season 5, right?
5. Yeah.
Yeah.
Regardless, you know what? Regardless of how many drop, we're just going to watch it one episode a week to do on the podcast.
Yeah, we are. We are. We're going to do one a week for the podcast. So anybody who's watching it, that's what's going to happen. And so now I'm pulling it up. Episodes of the show will be available to watch online week on Amazon until February when the countdown to the final season begins. The first 3 episodes are released on Wednesday. And then after that, it'll be once a week.
Gotcha. But like we said, we're going to watch it one episode at a time.
Yep. There'll be so much to talk about.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Well,
great.
We'll do it again next week. Actually.
Yep. Have a great week. Yeah.
Oh, good. And it works perfectly because Christmas Eve isn't until Thursday, so we don't need. I don't think we're going to take a holiday break.
Yep. We'll be
shows
on the 22nd. The holidays will happen while we're on break. Yep.
All right. Have a
All right,
good
cool.
week, Karen. And we'll
have a good week, everyone.
Next week.
Sure
good
will.
Night.
Take care. Bye.